Welcome back to the Critical Moves podcast. I'm Al, and today we are going to be taking another look at Forex games. Tim is with me. Hi, Tim. Are you good?
Hey, everyone. How are you doing? All good over here.
Excellent. And to assist us in understanding Forex games, we've brought in the experts from Explorminate. We've got Drixie.
Hey, the invasion has begun. You cannot resist.
And we've also got Ricky as well.
Hey Al, hey guys. No pressure. We'll do our best.
There's pressure. And I'll say that in the nicest possible way. We received some interesting feedback from our episode that we did on the state of Forex. I think the most wonderful comment was we were called knuckleheads. It was clear from the feedback, both on Reddit and also on the Explorminate Discord server, that we got some things wrong. So rather than just thinking, well, do you know what? Fine, sometimes we get things wrong. I thought, let's see if we can't learn from this. So I reached out to Drexie. I said, hey, would you be interested in coming and teaching us? So here you are. Are you ready for this?
Maybe, hopefully. I'll probably get it wrong as well, to be honest. I'm sure someone's going to hate what I've got to say because.
Well, you can't please all the people all the time.
Yeah.
Can you?
I don't even bother trying.
So to begin with, I'll ask Ricky or Drexie, whoever wants to chime in. We struggled, and I think from the feedback it's clear, we struggled to understand the definition of what a Forex game is. So can you help us with that?
Yeah, so I'll just give a brief history lesson of, you know, Forex games. The term came around, there was a reviewer, which I can't remember the publication off the top of my head, for the original Marcel Ryan game back in 93, I think it was. And he came up with the definition of a 4X game, which is explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate. Now, I will preface this, whilst a 4X game must have all four of those things, you do not have to actually interact with all four of them. And the games that allow you to interact with any of those in any combination you like is what makes a really good Forex game. Even though it started with Master of Orion, it has, over time, people have gone back and said, look, when it comes to computer games, at least, Civilization 1 was the first Forex game. So you had this explosion of Forex games in the 90s, and then by the early 2000s, they kind of died off. You had the rise of RTS then by the mid-90s into the early 2000s. And Forex games just kind of went to the wayside. Now, around, I would say, like between 2010 and 2013, you started to get more and more Forex games coming out again. This was also the time where, you know, I think Civ 4 and Civ 5 started coming out. You had Distant Worlds came out, and gradually more and more Forex games started to come out from the 2010s into the 2020s. And, we'll get into this, but I think since the 2020s, Forex games have been on a steady decline, and we've had some rather big Forex games absolutely fall flat on release.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Civ there, because that was something which we got completely wrong, because I think it was me, and I, hands up, I accept this. I said that Civ was a grand strategy game.
See, I think the issue you had, you listed the four X's, and you said, well, you can have like a scientific victory, so you don't have to exterminate anyone, which is why on my introduction I've prefaced that whilst the game has to have each of the four X's, you don't actually have to interact with those four X's for it to be a Forex game. So that's why I actually stuck that in, just so people know that, well, I didn't exterminate anyone in my Civ game. Well, it's still a Forex game. You could have if you really wanted to.
Would it be a 3X game if you don't exterminate anybody?
Well, in your mind, it's a 3X game, but for someone else, it could be a 2X game, or someone else, it could be a 4X game completely. But yeah, like I said, if the game gives you the option, then it's a Forex game. You just don't have to interact with those, all of the Forexes, although you typically will at some point. Even if it's killing barbarians, there you go. You've done your exterminating.
Tim, are you happy with that?
Yeah, sure. I guess a lot of grand strategy games would fall into 4X by that exact definition, since you can do those things in grand strategy games. But I do see the two very distinctively and differently from one or the other. Where I see 4X a lot like using Lego blocks to build something from scratch almost often, although not always. And then grand strategy game are usually part of like a broader narrative established world where you have also control over things a bit behind the scenes and not so inherently in right in front of your face kind of deal, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think the differentiation between 4X and grand strategy stumps a lot of people, and even, you know, in our Explorminate Discord we have people arguing about 4X all the time. So, you know, a lot of people have their own opinions on what a 4X is. Grand strategy, I think one of them, that there's a few reasons where I think it's not a traditional 4X, in that I think a grand strategy, well, for a start, most of the grand strategy games that I can think of all have a pre-made or a static map, so to speak. It's normally Earth or whatever, if you think of the Paradox games. So you're not actually doing any exploring, so to speak. You're not, you might find different, like you might interact with some people on the other side of the map, but in terms of actually exploring the map and discovering new areas, you kind of see it all there to begin with. But I think another big thing about 4X and grand strategy, because I do think there is crossover, but I think in grand strategy, you don't have your hand in everything. And I think, Tim, you were sort of touching on this. In 4X, you are basically overseeing everything. You're choosing what to build. You're choosing where to move your units. And you have very precise, you know, choices to make and decisions to make in those regards. Whereas in grand strategy, you're kind of like the governor, or, you know, you're not there to control everything. You're kind of overseeing things. Things are happening on a much larger scale in that regard. So you don't actually have as much direct control, and you're more trying to influence things and you know, as time progresses, as opposed to like moving this scout to this location on, you know, this hex on the map or whatever. So I think that's a big one as well that differentiates the two.
Yeah, I'll quickly like add that I should have said before that, you know, with a 4X game, typically there are exceptions, but typically you start off, you're like a very new civilization. So take for example a space 4X, you'll be like Earth when the Federation first went into space. You don't know who else is out there, so which is the exploring part. Whilst grand strategy, you know, nations are already set at the start and you already pretty much know where they all are on the map and what they're about, their political, religious things. Whilst 4X games, you're sort of starting with almost like a blank slate. So you're starting at the start of the story, basically, rather than jumping in halfway into the story.
Yeah, and on that note, you also have... So there's a lot more imbalance in a grand strategy game. Like you could start as, say, in Victoria 3, you could start as the UK and basically control the entire world, or you could start as, you know, some tiny country in the Middle East somewhere that's an unrecognized power and have a much harder game ahead of you. And also your victory conditions can be completely different in based on who you play as well. And oftentimes you're not really playing a grand strategy game to get that victory screen, I don't think. I think it's a 4X, you do have defined victory conditions. In a grand strategy, maybe not so much in that regard.
I'll quickly also say that typically in 4X games, you're looking to paint the whole map. Whilst in a grand strategy, you could just be, your goal could be just to take the countries around you or the regions around you.
Okay, can you think of a grand strategy space game at the moment then? If those are the conditions about knowing the map and knowing what's out there, Stellaris certainly wouldn't qualify as that, so... Distant World wouldn't either.
No, there are a couple, but I've not really played them. There's Stellar Monarch, which is kind of touted. There's actually two versions of that. I've not actually played them, but that's sort of touted as sort of a grand strategy 4X game. And
what about Terra Invicta?
Yeah, I was going to say Terra Invicta.
Terra Invicta, yeah. And there's a third one, Alliance of the Sacred Sun as well, is another game that's like that.
It's clear that there's some blurred lines then, isn't there, between Forex and Grand Strategy, because you mention a Grand Strategy game where you start with a defined empire, but then you're still exploring elements of Forex in that gameplay. Is it possible to decide what the differences are between Grand Strategy and Forex?
Like I said, the map is predefined. The map is the same in, because it's based on real world. So there's not really any exploring to do in a Grand Strategy. Yes, you can go and find stuff, but you know the whole landmass of, well, at least the continent you're on, for example, in EU4 or whatever, until you go to the New World, then that, I guess, is a bit of an exploration. But even then, no, everyone knows the map of America, so it's not much of an exploration. In hindsight, it would have been to the people back then, but to us, we already know what America looks like. So I think that's the difference. 4X, you can maybe see the planet you're on, or your city tower, and there's like a massive fog of war everywhere else, basically.
So an interesting game to look at then when we're trying to understand the difference between these would be the Total War games, because are they Grand Strategy, are they 4X, or are they something completely different?
Well, yeah, I think the Total War series have carved out their own little niche. It borrows from elements of 4X and Grand Strategy. I would say more Grand Strategy if you're going to pick a side, but I do think they're kind of their own thing in that, yes, there's a strategic layer, and then there's the real-time battles. The real-time battles have nothing to do really with either 4X or Grand Strategy. And the strategic layer, while has elements of maybe both in regards to that you're moving your units around the map, you have direct control of that, but at the same time you're not really building cities. It's already an established map that you is going to be a static map. So yeah, there's elements of both, but I really don't think I don't think it's either. I really do think they've made their own sort of genre, a total war game.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, especially because the combat feels so distinct and so heavily emphasized as well compared to any of the other things. So it leads a lot to tactic gameplay, I would say, that you don't typically see in either of these two.
One thing I will quickly say is that these genres are already so niche as well. So like Grand Strategy games, how many Grand Strategy games are actually out there? And even 4X games, while there was a sort of a lot of them that came out in the 90s and then a sort of renaissance in the sort of 2010s, when you're comparing to other stars of games, there really aren't that many. So I mean, this isn't really to make a specific point about them, but I think there is a lot of focus on, is this a 4X game? Is it not a 4X game? And because there's not actually been that many, I think it's hard to sometimes define whether one is or one isn't, just because of, you know, that there aren't tons of examples to really pull from that really absolutely define what a 4X is. And even the definition that I think, was it Alan Emmerich was the guy who came up with the definition? That was just something that he came up with in an article. So, like, I don't think he actually expected a whole genre to birth from it either.
Well, again, this is the other thing. You've got games that actually skirt on the line of, are they a 4X or aren't they a 4X? I mean, a perfect example of a game that was actually made by 4X developers, but you can't really consider a 4X because there's no, well, people don't consider a 4X because even though it's not in one of the X's, there's no diplomacy in it, which is Gladius, which is based on Warhammer 40K. And there's like absolutely no diplomacy in that game, for example, where typically a 4X game has diplomacy. Another one would be Sins of the Solo Empire, which sometimes it gets called, I can't remember what people, RTS 4X game. You know, is that an RTS game or is that a 4X game? The last two Field of Glory games, I mean, they could both be considered 4X games and Grand Strategy games as well. So even though people are stuck on these 4X, the definition of 4X, there are a lot of games I would like to think of it like a circle where you have the inner core, which is your Master Orion's Civ games. Then you have a sort of outer layer, which will be your Gladius's, your Sins of the Solar Empire. And then you move further out and you go into more like one way will you be moving towards grand strategy games, and the other way you might be moving towards more RTS games. So I think for people to be so anal, even though us in on the Exploramate, it is as bad, and I could be as bad as well. But I think because it's a niche game, people are quite protective and they get quite anal on the definition, which Al discovered on Reddit.
I think there should be some sort of spectrum. Someone needs to draw up a spectrum of, or like a Venn diagram, like you, or something that, like you were saying, that just settles it once and for all. But yeah.
Yeah, I guess we do find it easier to be able to categorize things, and that makes it easier for us to find similar games that we like or understand where things are going. And I guess there are some issues nowadays in the industry when you think of 4X. And one of the latest examples I can think of is the newest Civilization installment. I would say maybe that is part of the problem of trying to stick to the box a little too much and having this idea of, oh, this is what a 4X game is, and we have to stick to that, and we can't go too far away from that. And then we see a lot of games that look and feel very similar to each other, like Humankind coming out, being such a big clone of Civilization, and then Civilization basically cloning its own clone. And then when you get brothers and sisters together, that doesn't necessarily create something very, you know, new and innovative and nice. So I think that a lot of the energy that came in with the 4X branched out a little bit. And we talked about it before, and I totally agreed when I heard you guys saying that it went through something similar that RTS went, I would say, where RTS, I guess a lot of people must have felt that it died out a bit, but at the same time, it branched out. It got into other games that were similar to RTS, but not quite. And MOBA came out of this. Many other strategies similar games came out of this, and then something a bit similar with 4X. I mean, if we think of games such as like the Anno series, Anno is not a 4X game, but I think it used a lot of the innovations that came within 4X and then used it for its own good, and is now something different, but also not too dissimilar.
Where I'm coming from with that idea is what you had, which is what happens in 4X. You had Command and Conquer was so successful, and then you had so many games that just really stuck to that Command and Conquer formula, and the market got flooded with loads of games that were basically trying to kill Command and Conquer or be the next Command and Conquer game. And within 4X games, we had Civilization and you had Master of Orion. You had the terrestrial 4X game, which a lot of games were trying to copy. And then you had the space games, which when I said we had this renaissance of 4X games, a lot of them were trying to remake Master of Orion 2 specifically. There was a lot of Master of Orion 2 clones games that came out, which is great for, you know, especially, I mean, I didn't actually play the original. I actually came into 4X games when the 4X renaissance happened. So, you know, playing a Master Orion game type game, it was, oh, this is really cool. But there's no, like we're going to say, there's no innovation in that really. And there was very little innovation of any of those games really. Of course, they brought maybe some new systems or something, but they were very much Master Orion 2. Yeah, you mentioned Civilization. Well, Humankind trying to do Civilization 7 using Humankind as a thing. But the problem with Humankind was the era system, where basically after a certain time, your whole civilization gets reset and you basically start from the beginning. And that's why Humankind failed. And I can't for the life of me think, why the hell did they take the system that made that game fail and put it into your own game?
And I think this is where we come to the crux of the matter, is the, and something that we brought up in our episode was the lack of innovation. So as you say there, there was civilization, humankind aped civilization, and then Civ 7 came out and said, hey, this particular feature really didn't go down very well. Let's use it. Is that lack of innovation true with all RTS games? I mean, is this one of the problems that we have with 4X games? Is this one of the problems we have with 4X games at the moment?
Yes. I will mention three games that kind of are overlooked, but they are innovative because they bring in stuff from other genres. I'll start with Shadow Empires. I'm not sure if you know, are familiar with Shadow Empire, but it's made by VR Designs, who are known for their war games called Decisive Campaigns. So basically what Al did from VR Designs is take his war games and put a 4X spin on it. So it actually takes a lot of stuff from war games, like the logistics system, stuff like entrenchment and encircling the target, which you never get in 4X games, but a staple of the sort of grognard hex and counter war games. So I think that's probably one of the most innovative 4X games to come out. Distant Worlds 1 and 2 actually are real-time games like Stellaris, but unlike Stellaris, it actually has more of a RTS element. In your fleet, you can actually control like individual ships or select a group of ships and give them a different order than what your main ship fleet is doing, whilst they're still part of that fleet. So that makes it more of an RTS game, a 4X game with RTS elements. And there's also a lot of automation where you can delegate stuff that either you don't have the time to deal with or don't want to deal with, and the AI takes care of that. So, for example, when I play Distant Worlds 2, I control two, maybe three fleets, and then all the rest, like my defense fleets, I just let the AI control them. And the last game I will mention is the Dominion series, which their battles are auto-battlers. But not only do you place the units in the formation, you give them script of what they're going to do during a battle. So there is another innovation. The problem is those three games are the niche of the niche of 4X games. They're not as big as, say, Age of Wonders, Civ, Endless Legend, all these other games that are basically based on Civ or Master Orion. I think that's the problem, that not only the developers struggling to innovate, the audience are a bit stuck in their way as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that, I agree with the sentiment that innovation is a touchy subject in 4X games, because there has been some signs of it, and yet it's not always been well received. And I think that's for the right reasons. I mean, you're mentioning Humankind about the Civ swapping thing. That was just an absolute killer for me. I actually really like Endless Legend and Endless Space. But yeah, Humankind with the Civ swapping just made you so detached from your civilization. And there were also a lot of other problems plaguing the game. I think the pacing was off, and pacing in itself is a massive problem in 4X games, I think, that they're still trying to solve. And on that note, ARA, History Untold, which was a Microsoft produced game, which for some reason was just had zero, you know, press about it before it came out. It kind of just dropped, like there was just no information about it. And the player numbers now are just like non-existent for that reason, but also a major problem of that game. And it did try to innovate in the sense that it almost had production chains along with the Civ side of things. Like you had to it's been a while since I played it, but say you had to like build a chair, so you had to get wood, and then you had to get fabric, and then build like a workshop to build
a chair. It sounds like Anno, right?
Yeah, it's kind of got Anno elements to it, where, and then that's like a luxury good for your population and stuff like that. But the problem again with that game was the pacing. As soon as you, well, there was tons of UI problems as well, which made it a chore when you scaled out to the point where it was nice at first when you had one small city, but when you then had tons going on, it was just a nightmare to manage. But also the pacing, like as soon as you got, there was three ages to the game, I think. And as soon as you got past age one, there was no point in playing anymore, because generally if you got past that threshold, you were pretty much untouchable by the AI. So it was just like, what's the point now? So I never even got to see like the modern era of the game, or even the pre-modern era of the game, really. And they've been working on updates, which is mad to me, but fair play to them, because good for them to try and fix it. But the game's dead now. I'm sure it is, because there's just, the player counts are just non-existent. And it's a shame, because it was a sign of innovation that again was sort of hamstrung by bad implementation ultimately.
So I think it was in April, Exploramate released an episode, The Death of Forex, which may have been a tongue-in-cheek title given the focus of your podcast. And both Drex and Ricky were on that podcast. And I promise we weren't copying when we did The State of Forex, honestly. We were like, hey, they could do it, let's do it as well, honestly. But in that podcast episode, you discussed, or you talked about the problems facing the Forex genre at the moment. And we looked at that in our The State of Forex. But I think that we approached it from the perspective of we're gamers, we're consumers. So our feedback is normally it's crap or it's good. And that's probably about as in-depth as we'll go. Can one of you guys give us an idea of what you think the problems are at the moment facing Forex without mentioning innovation?
I was like talking about this on Discord the other day. I'm not a game dev, right? I don't know. I know you want me to answer, oh, well, just do this and Forex will be great. But I haven't got an idea. And it's obvious to me that a lot of game developers don't have any ideas, because all we seem to be getting now are sequels. We're on Civ 7. We got Age of Wonders 4. We got Endless Legend 2 coming out. It seems that no one's got a clue how to do this. They just seem to be like, oh well, we're just going to make Gal Civ 4, which is slightly different than Gal Civ 3 and Gal Civ 2. But it's almost like they're just doing it to get some money in the door. I'm sorry that sounds so negative, but that's how I'm feeling, especially with the Civilization thing. And just quickly to touch on the innovation part, is innovation in Forex is actually hard, because in Forex games, pacing is so vital to a Forex game. If your pacing is off, it ruins it. For example, the reason why I hate Stellaris, I think Stellaris has one of the best starting phases of any Forex game ever. The way you can customize your race and build it to how you want to play is just marvelous. The problem is it starts to fall apart towards the mid and especially into the late game, where the game sort of runs out of techs. So every tech you're researching is, oh, 5% extra bonus to this, 5% extra bonus to that. Finishing a game becomes a chore. It just ends up becoming a chore, where I've hardly ever finished a game of Stellaris. Now, on the flip side, you have, I've mentioned Age of Wonders 4. My issue with Age of Wonders 4 is, which funnily enough is a series that didn't start as 4X, has become more of a 4X over time. Age of Wonders 4 has some of the best tactical combat of any 4X game, right? We can probably all agree with that. My issue is, because the tactical combat is such a strong feature of that game, it takes away from the strategic layer of the game, because you're spending so much time focused on the tactical, which ends up making the game flow of that game. For me personally, it just ruins the game flow of the game, because you could spend half an hour doing a massive tactical battle and lose, and you probably just end up replaying it again. So it just ruins the game flow.
I absolutely agree with you about Stellaris. It runs out of not just tech, but also text, I think, as well. You know, a lot of the things that you discover at the start it stops being able to present you with new things to do. And then because it's such an old game, was it 2012, was it, when it was released?
Yeah, 2010, 2012, somewhere around there, yeah.
So technology-wise, it's really behind the times. And you said about all we're seeing is sequels, but we're also seeing clones as well. Have you seen Stellar Reach, which looks like an absolute Stellaris clone? It's even copied the name.
Well, yeah, like I said, we had a million and one Master of Orion 2 clones, like Star Drive in the Stellar Galactic. Oh, can't remember the name. It's so long. You see, well, there was loads of them. But this is what happens, right? A game becomes popular. It's not just 4X games. I mean, how many games now have some sort of card mechanic in them? Once one game gets too popular with a certain thing. Exactly. And it's a general problem with gaming, but I think it's sort of hit 4X quite hard.
Something that I personally enjoyed greatly with Grand Strategy games recently is the Victoria installment, which had a much bigger focus on economic and trading activity, especially with the latest DLC. And that gave me a lot of thought about this. And I think that's something that 4X could lean into a bit more as well. You have it in some older games, like I'm thinking something like Imperialism 1 and 2, which did have quite a bit of economy going and was tons of fun for me. I think Distant Worlds had a potential to be very economic focused, but then completely fumbled when it came to trade and diplomacy. Even Anno, which I referenced earlier, has like a huge economic system that's super fun, but then doesn't do trading very well at all. Yeah, I think a much more trading and economic focused 4X, I think, could be loads of fun. And it's something that I feel like is missing a little bit.
Again, this is true, but it also goes back to what I said is an issue. As long as it doesn't become the focus of the game. See, like I'm saying, there's this, the perfect 4X game, there must be a perfect, almost a perfect game flow from you starting off until you finishing. And if you start putting too many systems on, which Paradox are notorious for, which they've ruined Stellaris, in my opinion, once you start adding more systems, you get bogged down in these systems. So I think it'll have to be a new game that's kind of based on that, but it's not like too micromanaged. Like I said, I'm not an expert, but I think micromanagement ruins a lot of games as well. So you have to have that system, but it can't be too micromanaging to take you away from the root thing of what a 4X game is.
Yeah, I also think the feature creep in 4X games is becoming more and more apparent. Looking at, like, Paradox is a good example because they acquired Age of Wonders 4. And one of my big gripes with that game is how much DLC they're putting out. And it just like with Stellaris, I mean, I've not actually played Stellaris all that much, if I'm honest, and I've not played in about 4 years or so because I can't get into it because there's so much content. It's like, where do I even start? And Age of Wonders 4 does the same thing. And I get it because Age of Wonders 4, like a lot of the Paradox games, retains players really effectively. And they do it with this DLC model where they introduce the DLC and then with the DLC, they generally try and refine something or completely change an entire system within the game. To me, that feels it becomes very hard unless you're playing it very consistently. Like Al, who's got 7,000 hours or whatever in Stellaris, which is a crazy amount, then that's great for a player like that. But for someone who just, when you leave and come back and you don't know where to start and they've introduced systems that sometimes part of it's locked behind the DLC, that's, really, that's when it becomes a problem. And you start to feel the bloat, I think. And that's the problem. Like, patching over maybe not, instead of fleshing out systems in Age of Wonders 4, for example, I've found that they've just been throwing more stuff at it and seeing what sticks.
No, to build on to your point, the way the Paradox games work, if you play them, if you purely play them on, that's your main game, like you have people who only play EU4 or they only play Hearts of Iron, that's great. You're getting DLC all the time. But if you're the kind of player who jumps between games and you maybe not played Stellaris for 2 or 3 years, well, you come back and now there's like 8 DLC that have gone into the game. And this is the problem. They're games that they're good if you're constantly playing them, but if you're jumping in and out, then this DLC becomes like, I wanted to give Age of Wonders 4 another chance. And I looked on sale, it would have cost me £70 to get all the DLC, yeah. And this was on sale. I'll mention quickly, Paradox have about 5 years back, they decided that their DLC, no matter how old it is, will never go below 50%, which I think is absolutely just trash, because you end up getting the base game for like quarter of the price on sale, quarter of the price of the DLC that came out 10 years ago, which is absolute trash. The other thing they do, they give you these free patches. Oh, free. You don't have to buy the DLC. There's a free patch. The problem is these free patches are really, they put in some of the systems of the DLC, but to get that complete system, you have to buy the whole bloody DLC. So, I mean, they did, to their point, they did try and fix it with this. You can subscribe and get all the DLC access. So you can like play for a month and have all the DLC, but I just don't want to deal with subscriptions.
I absolutely hear you guys about the creep of all the new features and everything like that. And sometimes getting into one of these new games can feel like a huge chore that you have to learn all these systems and so on. But let's be clear here. Nobody's playing Hearts of Iron for like 5 hours. Like if you buy that game, install it and start playing, you know it's going to ruin your life and you're going to be like busy with this for like ages. And then the extra DLC and the feature creep becomes like really, really nice if you can really delve into it and it gets new stuff added to it. And I think that can be tons of fun, but it is quite hardcore and that does make it harder for me to get some of my friends to play with me. And like, oh, hey, let's play this game that you've never played. So let's first spend quite a few hours explaining to you all these different mechanics. So it is a double-edged sword, I would say. But Grand Strategy specifically is like a niche within a niche in a way. So I can forgive that personally.
Guys, we're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a couple of seconds. And we're back, and I want to move on to the future of Forex. Where do we go from here? Do we just accept that Forex is a niche genre with constraints that can't be moved? Or is there the ability for the game to, or the games to innovate and move beyond?
Well, for me, I think, as I've sort of mentioned, I believe a lot of the especially the bigger Forex developers at the moment are kind of stuck in a rut. And like I said, they're sort of just making sequels, really. They're just, releasing new versions of their previous game and they're throwing stuff on the wall and adding bits. But I think the future of Forex games, it will come from somewhere we're not expecting. It'll probably be a small developer, maybe, or a small indie studio. Am I expecting it to happen within the next 5 years? Probably not. But I think at some point in the future, you know, Forex games, in my opinion, will decline. And then someone unexpected, some indie dev is going to come along with some idea that none of us have thought of. And it's just going to rejuvenate Forex games like RTS games are being right now. I mean, can I ask quickly, Al, as I'm not really an expert on RTS game, I mean, I kind of stopped playing them after Total Annihilation. Do you think the new breed of RTS games are doing anything innovative, or they just, is it just players want that type of game again?
Well, Tim is more of an RTS expert than I am. I'm a jack of all trades, so I'll pass it over.
Well, actually, I don't know how aware you guys are of this meme on our podcast here, but there's this game that we keep mentioning. It's a pretty cool game that's pretty innovative within the RTS sphere. Interestingly, though, that innovation didn't come from like a big studio, but from simply people playing the game, an open source, free open game that has players be like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this in this game? And then being like, hey, sure, add it, program it, make it. We're going to help you do it and integrate into the game. And then 20 years later, you have a very advanced, very cool, mechanically complete game that surpasses, in my opinion, AAA games in terms of completeness, of feature, of style, and all of that. And that would be beyond all reason.
Beyond all reason.
Which you've got nothing to do with, right?
Oh, well, I mean, I do.
He's a shield, Drexy. He's an absolute shield.
I can feel this. I've got the waft of shieldness.
Nothing I said was wrong, though.
Tim, I know you say the thing that you said was wrong, okay, and you're right, but you and I will pick this up on another occasion because it's a 20-year-old rip-off of Total Annihilation, but please.
No, but I think it does touch on a big point, and that is that it's not a AAA studio that takes a huge risk and makes something different than anything they've made before. It's like individual people, a bit like in a modding community, bring something new in a mod. It's a bit more like that. And there's some games that lend themselves to that. And a lot of 4X games don't. And if they do make mods, it's not that big of a mod that really transforms the games into something that's so much more fun. I think Grand Strategy does it a little bit better, but all of that is still quite difficult because you have this really complex system that's difficult to tinker with.
You actually bring up a good point. I didn't actually think of that. A lot of, you know, you've had games that have come out of being mods of other games, and that could be where the innovation comes from. Even with like EU4, I don't know if you guys have heard of this mod called Ambanar, which is basically turns EU4 into like a Lord of the Rings type game. And that's really cool. So, yeah, it could be just some modder comes along. So, basically, we need every 4X game that comes out to have, like, really good mod support. So someone out there can actually come up with the innovation that they seem to be unable to do.
It is interesting that you mentioned RTS and innovation, because still one of the most played RTS games is Age of Empires 2, isn't it? And that's a game I used to play. I mean, I don't really pay attention to RTS so much these days, but that was a game that I played a ton of. Could be one of my most played games back in the day. And yet it's basically stripped down to its very core workable state that it just works for, you know, multiplayer it's perfect for. And when you're looking for innovation, you got a question. What are people looking for in terms of innovation? Because especially in 4X, like we've discussed, people are very protective about 4X. And when innovation strays too far from that, people start saying, well, not everyone, obviously, but there's people, I've seen people be like, well, that's not a 4X, you know, that's not, so it doesn't even matter. Like, and then 4X stays in this very, you know, static corner. And it's difficult because there's been games that have tried to innovate, like I said, Ara, even Endless Legend 2. And I think you guys mentioned this on your last episode about the Tidefall mechanic. Is that a bit of a gimmick, or is that a spin on exploration? I think it's interesting to try and change the map so that exploration is fresh throughout the whole game. And I think that is a problem in 4X, in that exploration does have a sort of end point in the game. And then, I mean, Drexy was saying about Stellaris, you know, once that first phase of the game's over, that's the most exciting part. And so I can understand them trying to innovate there, but is that enough? I don't know. I don't really have the answer, but it's interesting to discuss, you know, if that is going to be enough for players, or if something needs to come out of left field that's completely just revitalizes the entire formula.
Something I noticed amongst the many people that I remember who used to love Age of Empires 2 is that they loved the almost city building elements of Age of Empires 2, which was not huge, but at the time it was quite significant, especially compared to games like Command and Conquer. And they loved this. Oh, I'm going to build myself a little village. And they're not hardcore gamers or anything like that, but that's an aspect that they really connected with. And then they played Age of Empires 2, so they were added to the statistics of that game, but then they moved on to play other games that were much more city builder like your games. So in that sense, you could have thought, oh, well, you know, people have moved on from RTS, but maybe they were simply looking for something that was there, and then games evolved to have a broader sense of what a game can be, and they were never really going to be RTS players true and true anyway.
The other question we really need to ask is, do you really need them to evolve, or do you just need a game to just have a really good game flow? I'll take for an example, Master Orion's 1, there was a modern remake of it, which stays pretty true to the original, called Remnants of the Precursor. Now, that game, I mean, if a modern audience looked at it, yes, it will look really dated, but it's still really fun to play, and it's even simpler than Master Orion 2. But yeah, because it's so streamlined, and it just flows so well from start to finish of your gameplay, you don't need to add any more bells or whistles to that game, to Master Orion 1. It's almost perfect as it is. I mean, you know, you get people who play games for decades and they just play one game for decades. Are we sort of, as a modern audience, sort of been trained into thinking, well, games need to evolve, they need to add more things? And is that almost like wrong thinking?
You're absolutely right. I 100% agree. And I think that maybe there's this thing where we're all looking at things and saying, you must innovate, there must be something new. Whereas what really we all want as 4X players, or as gamers in a wider format, is we want something which is excellent, which captivates, which holds our attention. It doesn't have to be different. It doesn't need bells and whistles to make it exceptional. But how do you do that?
Has DLC almost trained us to expect when a game comes out, it must have tons of content thrown on top of it? Where in the past we didn't have DLC and, you know, we played games for years.
Yeah, I mean, I touched on it briefly earlier, but it does seem to be the trend that in order to, you know, retain players or to basically show that you're trying to support a game, means that you're throwing more and more systems at a game. And I mentioned Age of Wonders earlier doing that. And to me, that's not really what I'm looking for. I'm personally not, I mean, I came into 4X games around the same time as Drexy, so I'm not like a hard, like super old school player. Like, I've not played the old Mu games and things like that. But I just feel as though, like, I'm not really interested in a game that has loads of new bells and whistles. Like like Drex was saying, I don't need that. I want a game, and like you say now, I want a game that's just really tight and streamlined and offers multiple avenues to win, makes you excited to maybe play again and try a different strategy. It doesn't have to have all this extra stuff. And I don't have an answer to your question in how do you do that, other than, you know, there's games that I've played that have achieved that. And I guess the question is, do developers want to try and replicate that again, or is there any point? Is there any point in regurgitating a game again? I mean, there's sequels, but sequels have an IP attached to them, or, you know, an established franchise attached to them. So they're probably going to gain some level of player base anyway, or interest. But then if you stray too far from that formula, you're going to cause problems, you know, Civ or Humankind causing problems with the Civ switching. So it's a really tough one. I'm a bit stumped, but I find it's an interesting discussion, at least.
I think we find we're in a bit of a catch-22 situation in gaming in general, aren't we? Because we as consumers want to see great games. But if a developer puts out a great game which hasn't iterated beyond a sequel or a previous game, you know, the Civilization Humankind Civ 7 situation, for example, where they felt that they must put something in to differentiate themselves from the previous version of the game. And if they don't do that, then they get panned, or it's just a clone, there's no changes, where's the innovation? And maybe we're our own worst enemy as consumers, because we demand more and more, and we demand extra, and we demand new features. But these new features often fall flat because we want that exceptional, pure experience that we had from the first title.
Yeah, and this is a problem with modern gaming, right? Back in the day, you know, games could have been made by like 5, maybe 10 people. So if you had a really successful game, you know, you could spend the next 5 years working on a totally different game and you had the money to back you up. The problem with modern games is you need 300 people or whatever, even to, I bet like a Civ game is like at least 150, 200 plus people, right? So what do you do? Well, you either got to keep releasing DLC to pay these people, or you've got, if, you know, once you, that runs out, and to keep, basically you need, there's so many games out, these developers have to keep the players' attention. So that's for a while, it'll be DLC, maybe for 5-10 years, then they will have to release a new version to bring more money in. So we've got into this weird cycle where it's almost like the Marvel movies, you know, they have to make another Marvel movie because you have to make 200 billion at the box office because so many people are in so much CGI in movies nowadays and they cost so much. And it's just this, games have got into this weird cycle as well. Rather than in the old days, you would have had people who a studio made one game and then their next game might have been something totally different, but it's not like that anymore.
Well, yeah, and part of that point, I think, is, and what you mentioned about DLC is, games are often released not in their best form or in their final form. And obviously, you know, DLC can help with that. But first impressions are so important. And I think when you've got games that release without features that should have been there, or games that release in buggy messes, or games like Guild Wars 4 is an example of a game that came out on Epic and then moved over to Steam, and what was going on, you know, like it just when so whoever played the original version of Guild Wars 4, like that game's changed a lot since launch, but you know, how are you gonna retain your players if the game when it does initially launch is just not in a good state? And I think that mindset of a game not being released in a finished form and now it's like, oh, we'll patch it later. It's, yeah, you can, but I really don't think that that's a good philosophy to stick to personally, because I just think that first impressions count. And if you don't grab your audience right at the get-go, then, you know, you're going to have problems getting them back. And like I mentioned, Ara earlier, didn't have a great release anyway because there was like no press behind it, but they're trying to like fix that game, but I don't think anyone's really interested in giving it much of a second chance because of the problems it had at launch, you know. So that is also a problem.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a whole bunch of different models of how to do video games as a business. And I would lay a considerable amount of blame to shareholder companies who are looking at next quarter. I personally believe that's a terrible incentive when we're thinking of such a creative industry as, hey, let's make fun stuff for people to play. And we have some really good examples of formulas that do work. I mean, I'm thinking of something like Baldur's Gate 3, or I'm thinking of very small studios or even single persons making terrific games, such as Terraria or Minecraft, that are widely, widely successful. Okay, they're not 4X, they're not grand strategy, they're not even RTS or something like that. But then we have something coming up, something like Falling Frontier. And I definitely think it is possible to make something with a small studio or an existing studio that is not so bound to let's make a profit this quarter. Another avenue, I believe, is to get player retention is something like multiplayer, because I think multiplayer is something that keeps on giving because the opponent is not a predetermined set of triggers that can, after some time, feel stale, but it's another thinking opponent. And I think it's a great avenue for 4X and grand strategy and so on, is that multiplayer aspect, because you get this replayability, because you have to keep finding new strategies that the other players react to, and it doesn't even have to be competitive, it can be cooperative too. And I think a lot of 4X games and strategy game, grand strategy games, don't cater to multiplayer as well as they could have. I think you can even make a multiplayer only 4X game. That could be tons of fun, and I'm missing that a bit.
Well, you do have that, right? A lot of the pad, especially like Hearts of Iron, is very popular multiplayer, and that's the reason why it's always in the Steam top 100. I think Civ 6 had a massive multiplayer scene as well. But like two of my favorite games, I've played pretty much almost, well, Shadow Empires, I've played quite a bit single players, but the Dominions 4 and 5, I haven't actually got 6 yet. I've probably played between those two, I've probably played about 5 hours. Single player, yeah, I have over 600 hours played in those games, and that's pretty much all multiplayer. Same with Shadow Empires, a lot of my hours are multiplayer, but I'm currently not playing any multiplayer games, because whilst multiplayer just takes 4X games to its highest heights, even though those are play by email, they're not real, you're not playing in real time. You're taking maybe a turn every day or 2 days. It is quite time consuming, which is the problem with having multiplayer in 4X games. So I think if you've got the time, definitely look into playing multiplayer 4X games. The problem is we don't always have the time, especially the older we get.
Yeah, but why not have features that are like drop in, drop out kind of gameplay, where you don't have to talk to like a whole bunch of friends and be like, hey, you know what we're going to do for the next 8 hours? We're going to play this nonstop and nobody take any bathroom breaks, because that's going to bother us, all of us, which I think is a issue currently with how these games are designed. And they don't have this MMO factor of like, oh, you know, let's play for an hour or 2 hours and see what happens and engage with other players as I do so.
Yeah, but even in Dominions, once you start getting to the late games, your turns can take over an hour to do. Dominions, you start off like everyone got to do a turn once a day, and it ends up being like, oh, everyone do a turn every 3 or 4 days. And I've had Dominion games that have lasted 6 months. Don't even speak of war games like War in the Pacific and War in the East. Those games can last years when you play them multiplayer. So, yeah, you just need them. I mean, there are some fun games, that online games like Neptune's Pride was quite a good one. I used to play quite a bit online. It's pretty simple to do. But yeah, I think to wrap, really, I think, as an audience, as consumers, we might have to just start prioritizing and look, we've got all these great games. As long as the developers give us tools, even if it's not in their interest, to make new ways of playing the game and, you know, make like Stellaris. Like I said, creating your own race and how you want to play that race could be totally different to how you think. It's just that they've always had the problem of getting past that mid to late game period of the game. If someone can do have Stellaris' start with maybe a game that you can finish within 5 hours, for example, at max, then that might be the perfect 4X game.
Yeah, I think shorter games are certainly something I'd be more interested in. Maybe reinvigorating the victory conditions in a way that allows for shorter games, so it's not just a case of, you know, a science victory where you've got to research X amount or whatever, or, you know, you have to take out all your opponents. Like, these are generally quite big, you know, things that can take a while. And coming back to, not to dump on Humankind so much, but that was my problem with that game. You know, there was each era, when you made a Civ change, you then got more stars that you had to complete to get to the next era. And it was just like, it felt like such a slog. And I think that's the problem. If they can make a game that's fun to play, like Drexy said, from beginning to end, you can wrap it up. It doesn't go on for too long. There's ways to sort of end the game sooner. And it's just tight without too much bloat, without relying on DLCs to not even flesh out things that aren't there initially, but to add more stuff and throwing stuff at the wall. Yeah, I think that's what I'm looking for, because like you say, the Endless 2 is coming out later this year. I think a lot of the extra stuff in that is kind of superfluous. And I want to love it. You know, I love the older Endless games. So there needs to just be more of a focus on really tight game design. And I use that term a lot, and it might seem a bit aimless, and it kind of is, because I'm not a developer either, but I feel as though stop throwing stuff at the wall and maybe try and just refine what's there, tighten it up, make it quicker, make it more accessible so that it doesn't slog, you know, that type of thing is what I'm looking for, I think, really.
Ricky, we've totally missed a game we both love that does that exactly, which is Spellforce Conquest of Eo, which
yes,
very much is like in the same vein of Age of Wonders, but it's way more streamlined and the combat's a lot quicker. And we both absolutely fell in love with that game.
Yes,
right?
I didn't want to bring it up because AR seem to bring it up in most podcasts.
And it's not considered 100% 4X either.
And this is the problem. This is my problem. I don't think it matters. I think that game really did innovate in that it innovated on exploration, because you only had one city, for example. It was a tower. So you had to move that around the map, and it mattered where you were. You couldn't stay in one place for too long because resources would expire on the map. The combat was faster. There's different win conditions. Like, the games were quite long, but and I think that's one thing they could probably tweak, is maybe make shorter games, but they had shorter scenarios. And it did kind of turn the formula on its head, but I've seen a lot of pushback saying, well, that's not a 4X. And it's like, yeah, but it's close enough to me. It gives me the same feeling, even if not quite. It gives me at least a similar feeling to something like Age of Wonders, and I'd much rather play Conquest of Eo over Age of Wonders, because I just think it does a lot more in refining the formula and not making it as stale. But I always bring it up, so I try not to bring it up, that's all.
Yeah, I guess the final thing I will say is that rather than this refinement, I would personally look to take it into a different direction, such as, why not, for example, have a persistent world where you can log in for an hour and have your 4X gameplay within that persistent universe, interact with other players, have this multiplayer aspect to it. And then, oh, you know what? I've got dinner coming up. I'm going to log out and I'm going to come back later.
This has been tried, though. I think, what was it? There was a game called Starborn, I think. There have been a couple of these MMO 4X games that did try, but for whatever reason, you know, they ended up failing. Obviously, wish someone would come up with a good idea.
Guys, we're running out of time, so I just wanted to say thank you really, to Drex and Ricky for coming in, schooling us on what we got wrong. It is appreciated. I think we, Tim will agree, we have a better understanding of Forex now, and we fully hands up. We got it wrong in our State of Forex episode. So thanks very much for correcting us. And we've also had a look at the problems facing Forex games and what to expect from the future. And I don't think it's a dead genre. I don't think there's major concerns. It's not on life support. I think there is a future there. And I'm excited to see what comes out in the future. Drexy, Ricky, thank you very much for coming and joining us on this episode. It's been super helpful and really interesting. So thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Al. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good fun. Yeah.
Yeah, fan of the podcast, so glad to be on.
Yeah, same.
You're quite welcome. It's been a delight having you here. If you are a dedicated Critical Moves podcast listener, then you will find Explorminate at explorminate.org. If you're one of our awesome fans, then please do check out Explorminate. And if you are from Explorminate listening to this, then check out criticalmovespodcast.com, which is our main website, and you'll find all of the ways to get in touch. We may not be right all the time, but we're lovely, honest, and it would be interesting to speak to some more strategy game fans. So, Tim, Drexy, Ricky, thanks very much again. This has been Critical Moves. Take it easy. Goodbye.